we go. Oh, baby, welcome to Duck It Motherfucking Dialogue.
Oh, man, that was pretty good.
Going hard here.
So you're in Minnesota right now, right?
I'm in Minnesota right now, yeah.
Okay. How do you like it? How long have you been up there?
6 years in a few months.
Okay.
Yeah.
Dang, okay. So when did I guess for, you know, just to – could you just introduce yourself for us so we have some context here?
Okay, sure. You know, so I moved here in 2014. Let me start it, you know, like from the beginning. So
okay. Go ahead, state your name for everybody too. This is Rafi.
This is Rafi, yes. This is Rafi, and originally I'm from Afghanistan, but now I call myself as American since I got my citizenship last year.
Nice, dude. You deserved it. You deserved it for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, and I moved here in 2014. And since that, I've been living here and did not go back yet. So still with my parents, my sister, my brothers here. But I'm here, you know, enjoying my life with fellow Americans.
So all your family's still back in Afghanistan?
Yes.
Okay. So you were, you know, born and raised in Afghanistan.
Right.
What was it like? What part of Afghanistan did you grow up in?
In Kunar province.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we were in Logar.
It's far away from each other. And then we moved from Kunar to Jalalabad because Kunar is the most dangerous province, I feel.
Okay.
So people who works for ANA, Afghan National Army, or anybody, or any entities of the government, that's not safe to live there. So we moved from Kunar to Jalalabad. So since that, we're living in Jalalabad. Even Jalalabad is not a safe place, but it's kind of a little bit better than that place.
Okay.
So, yeah.
So what made you join with U.S. forces as an interpreter? How did that kind of come about?
You know, when I was in the Army, I had many friends.
You were in the ANA?
Yeah, I was in the
Okay,
ANA.
Okay, got. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah.
2004
to 2009. Got you, okay.
So I joined as a private, and then I promoted to, you know, during this 5 years, I was on certain major position.
Okay.
Yeah, so after that, you know that in the Army, you have a contract like 3 years, 5 years, 2 years, whatever, you know. So when my contract is finished, somehow I love to learn English, and I somehow, you know, I, from the beginning when I was a kid, I was always wondering that how I can learn English.
Really?
So even when I was in the Army, I was taking some English classes outside of my job. So like my job is finished 4 o'clock. Then I was getting like, you know, my civilian clothes and taking a taxi outside of the base and go out to the city and have a class of tuitions there.
Okay.
So 2 years, somehow 2 years, yeah, I got those classes to learn English. And after my contract went finished with the ANA, so I thought, you know, some of my friends went to become interpreters, and they told me, man, you speak very good English. And there is people we have, even they don't know words in their interpreters, so it would be better if you go there. And I feel like, you know, if I go there, I can do 3 things. One is that I'm serving for my country, and I can do the same thing as there, you know. Other thing that, if I work as interpreter with U.S. Army, the gap that people in the U.S. Army have between each other, I may be able to, you know, pull that gap, you know, and maybe work a little bit closely with local and U.S. Army, and it might be beneficial for local and for the U.S. Army. So
yeah.
I started that, and plus my interest, you know, I thought, you know, this is going to be how I can learn English and do more things. And that's how I went there.
So you pretty much just, you were in the military, you went to classes on the side, and just so you could learn English,
right?
Speak English. What made you want to learn English? Why did you have an interest in, you know, learning the English language?
You know, not only English. I love to learn many languages.
Oh, okay.
Right now, I speak Pashto, which is my native language, and then I speak Dari, you know, Farsi.
Yep.
I speak Hindi and I speak Urdu.
Oh, wow.
That's English, right?
Okay.
And then, even the same time when I was taking English classes, I went to learn French, and I got a few classes, like 3 months I went there, but somehow I feel like French is a little bit more complicated than English.
I'm barely grasping English myself, so yeah. You're so, way ahead of me.
Every time I was talking with my French teacher, I was talking in English, and he said, you know, you mixing your words with French. And I said, you know, that's how I'm confused last 3 months, and I don't know. And then somehow I feel like, you know, let's stay on this English only and learn English first, and then you can get to
branch
French
off.
Language.
Okay.
So, yeah, and
So when, when I was in Afghanistan, that was your first, you know, experience being an interpreter? That was your first time?
You were in
2009.
Yes, 2009. That was the first time, right.
Okay.
Yep.
So after we left, did you stay and with another company or how? Okay.
Yeah. So every time, you know, the company or the unit is coming, and then after a year, they go back, right?
Yep.
I was always there. So a new company, and I was just, you know, lead them where I was, you know, tell them this is good place, this is bad place, this is the people that we will be talking, this is the sub-governor, this is police chief, these are good people, these are not good people. So I was like, you know, main source for them.
Were you in the same part? Were you still in Shark that whole time? Oh, oh, wow, okay.
The last, in 2013, or end of 2012 and beginning of 2013, I moved to Fab Altimore.
Okay.
Just because we had an advisor team there, and the end we were trying to close the cops in that cop.
Yeah.
So they moved me to work with the transaction things, you know, so I was with the advisor team.
Okay. It's just crazy to think that, you know, I was there for a year, and it was crazy for me. And just, you know, to see you and just think about all the things that you went through to get to the position you are now is just, it's admirable for sure. You know, like you've had to go through so much, and it's hard to even put into words, like how much you've gone through just to be able to come to the United States.
Right. You know? It's not an easy process to come here. People feel like when you come here, they think it's so easy, but no. When we were as a work as interpreter, I have seen, because I was the head interpreter, you know that I was working with the company commander.
Yep.
We had many interpreters. They came there, and they, when they went on mission and they saw that a few shots there, and then they come and resign. They left. They say, you know, this is not safe. We are not going to be staying here. But, and I feel like, and somebody has to do this work, you know. Our country, and we have American soldier here, and they came here to help us. It's not just they came here to fight. We last 4 years, I worked with them. We tried to, make bridges, roads, you know, we bought their carpets for their mosque, you know. We gave them many things just because to bring peace in those area, in those douchebags or coming, you know, killing people, you know. No, we work for the people there. So I just wanted to understand the people, you know, this is how it works. They came here to help us. If today they make this clinic, they're going to leave next year or 2 years or 5 years or 10 years, but you guys will be using this clinic.
Yep, exactly.
You guys will be using this road. So they're not going to be here for, you know, all their lives. So that was like, you know, man, thing that I make sure that people understand why the Americans are here. You know, it's not just because to come here and fight, but that's just because the few people you have in your village, they're trying to bring destruction and, you know, take us the good people, trying to, you know, get more bad people. And that's not, we are not here for that, to let them to do that, you know.
Yeah. Man, it's how's that school? Was the school still running there and everything? Were the kids still able to go to school?
I mean, people, it's not safe. Some schools are closed. Some school is still, people is going. But those area that's under Taliban, that depends on Taliban. If they say you guys can come to school, they will come. Otherwise, like, especially for women, girls, yeah, they don't let them to go to school.
Yeah.
You know, after like 10 years or 12 years, they say you guys just gotta stay home.
Yeah.
So, no female teachers, they don't let them. So Taliban is like, you know, they're just there and just, you know, like, I don't know what they're doing, but just destruction. That's the only thing.
Yeah, that's all. Man, it was, I mean, because we had where we were at, the police station, our cop there, that school was right there, and the kids were still, you know, on and off coming to school and stuff. So I was just curious if that was still operational, or if that, you know, the Taliban ended up taking that over, or what happened with that.
Oh, that school, yeah. You know, like I told you, they don't care about the education for their people. That's for true. You know, there was a toilet rooms, if you remember, on the right side, the front of the building, small rooms. Yeah.
Yep.
What they did in the end, 2011 or 10, I think, what they put bombs there somehow. Those kids brought that.
And the kids brought it.
Yeah. And, you know, somehow, but, you know, they forced the kids. They put the bombs there. So just because sometimes the AG was going there and they were using those toilets. So they were trying to blow up the things. And the AG noticed that there is a bomb or something. And then we went there and we found like it was a heavy, huge thing. So when the U.S. Army blew up that thing, it damaged all the glasses in the area.
Oh, wow, dude.
Like heavy thing. So, and another thing that in front of that school, like when I say we are, I mean American, you know?
Yeah.
Because since I work with them, not with Afghan. So Afghan Army and ASG and some American soldier, we were playing volleyball there in front of the school. And every time we put the net and start playing, and those people was watching us. They start shooting us.
Shooting at you once you
like,
start playing.
Just like for 5-10 minutes, we had a fun, and they didn't let us to do that. So we had to come back. And then like a few times it happened, and then the commander said, guys, you know, those guys is bullshit. They're out there and watching us, so we should be, you know.
Yeah, it's hard.
Around. Yeah.
So with that bomb that they found in the toilets,
yeah,
you said that the Taliban had made some children bring that in and put that into the toilet?
That's what we feel like. A lot of, not only children, there were some adults too coming to that school.
Yeah.
So we feel maybe they influenced them.
Yeah.
You know, to go and take this thing. If you don't take it, you know, I'm going to kill you and blah, blah. Yeah. So we feel like what we did, we searched the whole school and all the kids and things, but, you know, we had some suspicious people, but that doesn't mean that they were the right people, you know.
Yeah, and that's a thing that I've tried to help people understand here in the States is, you know, that a lot of times there was just little kids that were, you know, the Taliban would say, hey, we're going to kill you or your family, and then you shoot at the Americans or we're going to kill you. And, you know, that's the type of environment, you know, the people of Afghanistan are growing up in. And, you know, it's, I mean, from the kalats, you know, people living in the mud houses and, you know, no electricity, no running water, stuff like that. And to see everyone here complaining about like just little things, it's almost comical to me, you know, and that's why I think it's important to have you here and kind of share your story and tell, you know, because it's just, I mean, you went through so much to get here when so many people are like, you know, jaded by America. And it's like, dude, people are going through so much stuff just to get here.
Yeah, that's right. You know that I worked there as a DJ too for the capture.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I was worked there as like, you know, DJ, you know, put music on the people and talk to sub-governor, bring him for hour, you know, so just explain what's going on. And then I was so famous, you know, that like working with that commander and they were going to that Shoras, you know, meetings, big meetings, and all those leaders coming, and then being a DJ here, you watch people outside. So somehow I was in church. I was just like famous guy, you know, everybody knew my name.
Yeah.
And so what happened one day that we went to church bazaar.
Yeah.
And, somehow we were, you know, ambushed there, and there was ivy on the tree, one on the tree and one on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they start fighting us, and then we walk around, but there was that narrow place between two buildings that we were walking, and there was ID. So we had a medic with us, a lady medic, and somehow she got on that ID.
Ooh.
So we were like under attack for an hour on that church bazaar, and like everybody was just like, nobody knows where we are. Like, you know, shot from everywhere. But
so you and her were trapped together?
We were together. I was behind and she was in front. But somehow, like, before she get there, the ID blew up and she lost the leg.
Oh.
That's medic. And it was a sad day for everybody. And then we were there, like, after that, when I returned back, so I went on vacation. So this is a story, like, how the Taliban was thinking about me. So after that fight, I went on vacation for 2 weeks, I think. And the district and the local people, everybody was thinking, Rafi got killed on that attack, and people were celebrating because they were thinking, like, I'm the head guy for, you know, American people there. And they were so happy. But when I returned, because my voice was not on the radio anymore. After
I got you. Yeah.
And nobody could see me in the cop. So when I returned back and we went to a meeting, and I saw some of the leader, you know, the people of the village, and they're looking at me, oh man, you're alive. Oh, we are happy that you're alive because somebody told us that you got killed in that attack. And I know, you know, you, I feel like, you know, I know you guys want me to be killed, but you know, I'm still alive.
Yeah, you're still fighting, man. That's
still alive. So those people, yeah, I mean, like, we knew that the people who is coming to the district and have a meeting with us, they also have a connection with those people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for sure, like, and then they signed, then they went back, maybe they tell them, oh, that guy is still alive, you know.
Yeah.
And then one day, when I came here, moved to the state, I did not tell anyone that I'm going to the U.S.
Yeah.
Like my cousins, even like, you know, only brother, sister, they knew that. But in the last day, my cousin, they knew that I'm moving. I just told them, you know, just because my cousin is cousin, you know.
Yeah.
And after 10 days or 6-7 days, I think, I got a call back from home, and my brother was actually talking to me, and he said, you know what? You're a lucky man. I say, why? He said, like, from 5 to 10 people got into our house, and all of them, the Taliban, they had RPG, PKI, I mean, all this kind of stuff, and they came and they searched every single room in our house. And
they were asking for you?
And asking us, where is Rafi?
Oh, my God, dude.
He said, my father has just told him he's not, he went to Dubai. He's not here anymore. And they said, no, you guys got to tell us. And then they punched a few, you know, test my dad and my brothers. He was okay. But, and they told me that situation. And then, trust me, and that I was here. But, like, for the next week, I was scaring in sleep when I was going to sleep here.
Yeah.
I was just scaring here. Like, what happened? If I was here, it means, like, I was gone.
They would have. Wow, man. So they knew where they found out where you lived from you being an interpreter. And
too easy for them. Those people have connection everywhere. So on that day, and then I decided, oh man, God bless America that I'm here with my kids and my wife. You know, I'm safe. Otherwise, what happened if they would kill me in front of my dad and mom, you know, and kids? So so since that, and I said, you know, man, I'm happy to be here, you know. So, yeah, that was another accident that I feel like so bad,
man. Yeah, man.
and being America, it's I don't know, like, but for people like us who put their life in danger there and came here, it means a lot.
Yeah,
it's like really, really a lot to them, you know.
Yeah. So when did you You got here when? You've been here 6 years, so 2014 you came?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So you were in Shark from 2009 to 2013?
13, yeah.
Okay, and then you got – so how was the process of getting your what made it so you were able to come over here? Did you have to just apply?
Before that, before the SIV, you might know SIV is a special immigration visa.
Okay.
The interpreters is getting. But before that, we had another process for that you go through some checklist, and in the end, you're going to get a letter from the general, U.S. general. He's going to write a letter and say, oh, yeah, this guy can go, or he will approve your document.
Gotcha.
So I started working on that, and then in 2010, I think, or 11, that's how the SIV started. Somebody told me that, you know, there is another program that you can apply for it. And, you know, that might be quicker than the one that you're currently working. And then apply for SIV program. And then, so in that SIV program, they want you to have, you know, kind of recommendation letter from your boss or anybody that you work with them.
Yeah.
So that they confirm, yeah, yes, this guy's worked with us for this much time and he was liable, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, person and blah blah, so he or she will recommend you, and then you have some other document inside the country that NDS, National Defense Intelligence people,
okay,
they will check your background check before, so they look around if you're a good person, you know, blah
yeah.
blah. So all those things after the investigation of the National Intelligence, they get all your document to the U.S. Embassy, and all this process is going to take like a year or two, three. It depends, you know.
Yeah.
Some people I have seen 6 years. After 6 years, their process is done and they moved here. But my process was like a year.
Okay, so you started it, you know, in 2013 or so,
13.
And then you're able to.
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha,
13,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So what made you finally decide to? Hey, I've had enough. I want to get, you know, get to the U.S. What made you say, I guess, not want to stay there and be an interpreter anymore?
The last 2013, when we closed the COPS and we closed the FAA Baltimore.
Gotcha.
I was the last person who came out from Baltimore.
Oh,
you know,
man.
We closed everything, and I was the last person. And then the captain that I was working, he told me, you know, now you are released. Not only you, the whole team is released because we are going back. Nobody's going to work in COPS or FAA Baltimore. Everything that we transferred into ANA, so that thing that Baltimore and COPS, they were completely belong to ANA.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then I got released with some other friends, and I came home. But before I released, like a month before, I sent my document to the U.S. Embassy. And when I came home after a month, I got approval that you are approved for, you know, this process.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So then at the same time, my mom was sick at home. So I was, you know, trying to take care of her and doing a process things, you know, looking for, okay, how to make my med certificate, you know, how to do my, translate my identification cards to English, you know, all those, how
yeah.
to get my passport. So I start working on that one. And then I got a call from Schenck. They wanted me to come and work for the colonel.
Okay.
And then I told them, if you guys can give me just like 2-3 months, you know, I'm under this process. I cannot come from Baltimore and then go back to, from Schenck, go back to Kunar or Jalalabad and do this process if they want me.
Yeah.
So I can stay here and work on those documents. Plus, I can take care of my mom. And I told them, you know, I can have like just a few months. And then once this process and my mom get better, then I can come back.
Yeah. How's she doing now?
Yeah,
okay?
That's good. Yeah, she's fine now. She's fine. She
good.
Has a diabetes. So.
Okay.
Yeah. So they gave me that few months. And I said, I was still getting a call from them and asked them, you know, how is your mom doing? How are you doing? And I said, no, still fine, but, you know, not good. And then I was under this process, like, for a few months. And then in the end, I just told them, you know, I would rather to stay home. I'm
yeah.
not going to come. Because I knew this process is going to go. and I just don't put on the end my life in danger when I go back to Logar and come back. And this, like, there's a lot of people got killed on the way. When you go on the taxi from Jalalabad to Kabul and then from Kabul to Logar, on the way, this douchebag is coming out to the road and search cars.
Yeah.
So I was just kind of really scaring, and I thought, you know,
because they'd recognize you probably, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we were going out and, you know, our face was open, not like, you know, so everybody knew. So I feel more danger, and I thought, you know, I'm going to stay home.
Yeah.
And work on my process. And that's what I did. And then, you know, 2014, I came here and then got my visa, everything. And then I moved here.
And then, so when you moved here, you started school?
Yeah, that's another story. So when I moved here, after a year, I was new, like, you know, I didn't know what to do. So,
okay.
Good thing about when I came here, I had a friend who lived here before. And after I got my social security, which is, it took me 5 days to get my social security card. And I applied for a job in a company, a food company. And I got a job here. They offered me a job. I just told them, hey, guys, you know, I didn't work in food company. I work all time, like, with military and security and all those things. But I'm interested to, you know, if you guys can offer me this job. And they say, you know what, welcome. So I got interview and I got the job.
Nice.
So I got there as a clerk, you know, and then I worked here as a clerk, and then I got a serial license,
Truck
driving. So I was doing some driving and plus some inventory, but at the end, I end up with customer service manager.
Okay.
So I worked here for 6 years straight when I came, you know, 6 years, and I didn't go anywhere. At the same time, after a year, I thought, you know, now I got a job. Now I got my social security. Everything is set up. Now it's a time to go to school. In Afghanistan, I didn't get a chance to go to school. And it was not easy to go to school. You have to support your family, and it wasn't safe too, you know, to take a taxi and go to school every day.
Yeah.
So I started to take some ESL classes near to where I live. For 8-9 months, I take some classes and also work on some GED stuff to make ready for the college. And after a year...
you had to take your GED first before...
GED, I had my high school diploma, but I just went to GED classes to refresh my mind for the college.
Yeah.
I just don't want it to go there and then taking like basic things for 2-3 years and then get into the college level, you know?
Yeah.
So that those things helped me. So when I went to college, I gave an acuplacer test, and they told me that there is like one semester that you have to take before you get into college.
Gotcha.
So I took that semester, and after that, I was going to full-time work and part-time school.
Okay.
So I continue that. It took me like 4 years to get my 2 years degree.
Gotcha.
Because, you know, full-time job. At the same time, also, I was doing as a part-time Uber.
Okay.
So whenever
busy. You're busy,
time,
man. You never rest, do you?
Whenever I had like half hour or 1 hour extra, I was telling my wife, you know, if it's okay, I can go just, you know, walk around for like hour or two and, you know, do Uber and come back. And
she said,
okay, just go ahead. So I was doing that, and Uber, full-time job and part-time school, and taking care of my 3 kids and my wife.
Dang, man.
So it was not easy, but, you know, I never gave up.
And
I
said, with a smile on your face too.
Yeah. I have to get this degree, you know.
Yeah.
And then the good thing, when I finished, I was a scholar student in the college. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of my friends, they knew, man, you came from a country like, you know, a poor country, and you worked hard, and now you're a scholar student. That's awesome.
Dude.
You know, I say, you know, this is something that you got to be confident in yourself.
Yeah.
That. Don't think like, you know, if you come from this area or that area, but if you get into something, work hard.
Yeah. And you're putting in the work, dude. Like, I mean, I'm so happy to see that you're doing well and that you were able to get out of that situation and come here. And, you know, it's, you're doing a lot, you know, there's so many people that would just, what you've gone through could destroy most people, I feel like, you know, and you're just still the same happy guy that I remember from 2009, you know, it's good to see, you know, I'm glad to see it.
Yeah. So, yeah. And now after I got my 2 years degree, now I got a mission in here is a Metro State University.
Yep.
So I'm working to get my bachelor too at the same time.
Okay.
I'm not going to stop, you know, education. No.
Yeah. It's lifelong learner, man.
Yeah. The more you learn, the more you get smart and understand better, you know.
Yeah.
I think education is the only way that, you know, you can understand the world.
Okay. Exactly, man. Yeah. You got to, I mean, especially with your perspective, you know what I mean? You've seen and lived in some of the worst conditions and you've seen the worst of humanity and some of the best of humanity, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But just to see you, you know, overcome that is pretty admirable, man.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I mean, I feel like there is nothing hard in this world, but people just need to be committed.
Mm-hmm.
For their goals, and anything happens. So when I was going to school and taking a degree in criminal justice, my friends and people was telling me, they were asking me like, what do you want to do with this degree? And I say, you know, I would like to work in law enforcement.
Yeah.
And then they were telling me, man, you know, they don't take you because you're not native of this country. You are not like born here, and they need a people like, you know, who is white, you know, and like you're immigrant and blah blah, and they act like that. And I said, you know what, I don't go to that, you know, that's some obstacle that you make it for yourself. I don't go that way. I go the way that I think I feel like I can take this degree and I can apply for a job, and, you know, why not? You know, I show my, you know, professionalism and tell them, you know, this is how I am. And if I still didn't get, it's okay, but I will keep trying.
Yeah.
So when I got my degree, and then some of my friend was asking me like, okay, you got a degree, what you got now? Well, like, you still work in the meat company.
Yep.
And I say, you know, it's okay, you will hear one day. And then I start putting my resume in, you know, CV in some other companies and places. And now I got a job in the county as a correction officer.
Dude.
Yeah.
Look at you, man.
Since July 6th, I got hired there. And I'm working there as a correction officer now.
Dude. I just want to like clap for that, bro, dude. Like,
yeah.
So you're doing part-time school still.
Yeah, I do part-time.
And working full-time correction officer now.
Correction officer, yep. And dude, taking care of three kids, and the fourth one is on the way. So maybe in a week.
Oh man, you're busy.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Fourth one is on the way. I have three boys actually and one girl. So the girl is on the way. So
okay.
No more kids. I mean, four is
done enough. After. Yeah. Shoot, one's enough for me, man. I'm like,
yeah.
Oh my gosh. Do you keep in touch with any of the other guys like Latif and is Latif around you?
Yeah. Latif living in Minnesota, but he's driving truck, you know, state to state. Yeah. So he's pretty much busy all the time. And I do talk to him once a while on the phone, and I think he's ready to move back to Afghanistan. He got offer for a job as interpreter.
Okay.
So he might go back with U.S. Army there.
I got you. Okay. And how long has he been in the U.S.?
Maybe 4 or 5 years.
Okay. And he wants to go back, though. He doesn't – he wants
– he stopped back. You know, Latif was the guy who was taking the most – you know, time when he was going out, every single time he was under attack.
I know.
You remember, like, your platoon and his platoon, and man, like, every time he was thinking, he would say, oh, man, you know, you're lucky. And man, you're a tough guy, and I love it, you know?
Yeah, Latif, I love Latif, man, because he was my interpreter.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so He was all, man, we'd always be in firefights, and he'd just be like, man, what is going on? Like,
Yeah, man.
That's
true.
That's funny. So, corrections, how are you liking it so far?
I mean, it's nice job, to be honest, and I was thinking, oh, man, I wish I could apply here, you know, earlier.
Yeah.
But it's nice job. I mean, it's a lot of responsibility, but if you are on active person, positive, and use your language in the right way with the people. I know people who is coming to jail, they are like, you know, you don't think like, you know, they did something wrong, they end up in jail. So not a, to be called, not a good people, like somebody hit your mom or kids or, you know, robbery or those kind of things. But as far as I know that, you know, working as a correction officer, you got to use your professionalism, like, be nice to them. Talk to them in the way that they like.
Yeah.
You know, you don't talk to them what you like to tell them, you know. Don't use the power of your uniform when you are walking around. Be more friendly and, you know, like, listen to them. And then, you know, make sure you read each person, like, what they like, what they don't like.
Yep.
What thing is good for him in life. You know, and that way, if you understand the situation and the inmates and you work with them, then it make it easy for you. But if you're showing yourself like a bossy person and think like, you know, I have uniform, I can knock you down. No, there is some people that they don't care, you know, and then they can do whatever they want, but you don't be like that person. So I feel like, you know, so far I have been there for a few weeks and it's a nice job and I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it sure beats getting shot at all the time, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man. So are you planning on maybe getting your parents over here at all ever? Or do you go back? Are you planning on going back and visiting at all? Or
I would love to apply for them and come over here. If my mom and dad come here, man, then I would be in paradise, you know.
Yeah.
Because I always thinking about them, especially my mom. She has a diabetes, and sometimes she gets sick in hospital for a few days. And, you know, but the good souls, I can send them my money, you know, and they can take care of her. But I always miss her. Like she, like you know, when like I was like 19, 20, or 22 years old, I went to the army and spent like half of my life in working outside of the house. You know.
Yeah.
Like, you know, from 2004 to 2013, and then I came here. So my mom really missed me, like, all the time. She said, you know, you spend half of your life out of the house. And we didn't see you. And I think in the family, they have, like, everybody have their favorite kids, maybe, mom and dad, you know, sometime, you know. And I'm the favorite one. So, I might start applying for them, but this coronavirus thing.
Yeah.
I don't have any plan now to go because it's a coronavirus and not safe. Just like a few months ago, one of our neighbor, who was in the ANA, somebody put a hand grenade to their house.
Oh my God.
So after that, I said, you know, man. That's good to hear. I had a plan, but since this accident, now it pushed me back, you know?
Yeah. I mean, imagine. So that all, how, when that happened, when they came into your parents' house and threatened them trying to find you, I guess, what was that shortly after Altamer and all that shut down? So were they just looking for you? Were they trying to, they thought you went home after that or something?
They always like, you know, they always have connection with those people from one state to another state, you know.
Yeah.
And being like, you know, a famous person and if they kill you or if they kidnap you or if they capture or arrest you, you know, somehow they get credit for that, you know, if anybody do that. So everybody, those people is looking for those kind of people. And I knew that... one day my brother's wife, she went to a clinic. We have a clinic near to our home. So woman is going there once a while and she was sitting on, you know, the hallway with other women and somehow like she was and the burqa, you know?
Yeah.
And there was other woman in the burqa, and one woman told her that, hey, I know somebody from your house is a DJ and working for Infidel. They didn't say American, you know?
Oh, wow. Working
for Infidel. And then my brother wife said that, you might have wrong information. We don't have anybody that work for the army or for U.S. Army or anything.
So even through the burqa, they were able to, they knew who it was.
They knew who you were, you know. So, like, there are many accidents like that. But the good thing and the good part that, you know, being here is a privilege. It's nice to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, somebody told me what's the difference here in the Afghanistan. And I say, you know, the one thing I always be happy. When I sleep like a baby. I'm not worried about anything.
Yeah.
Like somebody's going to come and kill me in my bed.
Yeah.
But when I was at home every night, if there was a wind and they, you know, drop something, sometimes there's windy, you know, you can hear something outside in your house, like fell down or something. I was always wake up and look around like, oh, maybe somebody got into, you know, let's, you know, walk around, see what's going on. And like there was no sleep. Even during the day, if you go out, you should look around what's going on, you know, make sure your surroundings is, you know, right people or bad people. But you were always, you had that fear in your heart.
Yeah.
All life, you know. So that fear, since I came here, I don't have that fear anymore, you know.
And that's a constant. That was a constant thing, a fear of
always
looking at you. Like, and
you
then
feel like somebody's going to kill me right now.
Yeah.
Maybe today or tomorrow. When you leave house and go for shopping and you kiss your kids and you say, you know, I'm going to, but you don't tell them that what might happen. But I was feeling like, you know, let's grab my kids, you know, kiss them before I leave, you know, what happened if I don't come back. So it was not easy, but, you know, being here, to be honest, you know, it's just something that I was not thinking it happens in my life, and I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. And that's being able to just have that constant state of alertness and being able to let that finally just go, and you have that sense of peace and that sense of safety. And that's huge, man. That's a tough life.
Yeah. And I always telling my friends, like, being in America, like here, people are, you know, awesome people, you know, whatever you leave, just gotta be, you know, you gotta be any community that you leave, you gotta be a productive one.
Yeah.
Or woman or man, you know, work with your neighbor, talk to your neighbor, you know, be a friend, you know, ask them if they need help, you know,
exactly,
share your concern with them, you know, listen to them what they have for you, you know, and be active and positive and productive member of the community, and that's how the life will go, you know, so nice and happy.
Yeah.
If you just work for yourself and take care of your kids and your family, I know that's a part of our job, but I feel like that's not something that you should do. You should take care of your neighbor. You should take care around the people who is living in that area.
Exactly.
There is the old person and can't go to shopping. Like I had a person when I moved here, a disabled person like who can't drive. And when I came here and I told him, you know, my name is Rafi and we just moved here and I have a car, you know, everything. If you need a shopping or anything, just please knock my door. You know, I would love to help you out. And I was taking him to Walmart. I take him to the bank, you know, I take him, you know, walk around outside, you know. So just make sure that, you know, I gave my number and I told him, you're living alone with no wife, no kids, nothing. And if you stop, please let me know. So every time now he is like, he was really sick and he called and he said, you know, I can't move. And I was at work and I told my wife, please go and open, you know, knock his door and, you know, or I'm going to call 911 so we can take care of that. And I did that.
Imagine if you weren't there, if you never reached out to that guy, and that, you know what I mean? You made a huge difference in that guy's life.
Yeah. And then I called him and 911 came and they say, three times, not one time. One time I was at home and he was walking like limping on sides with, you know, and told me, hey, he couldn't talk. Like somehow when he talks, you don't understand him very well just because he has that disability too. And then I called 911 and then the fire rescue guys came and they asked me a few questions. And I told him, you know, this guy is like, he doesn't look good. He's feeling like very weak and sick. And then they throw him in the ambulance, took him to the hospital. Wow. So those kind of things, like I always telling my friends and people, everywhere when you go and move to a new area, make sure you connect with neighbors, talk to your neighbors, explain yourself what kind of person you are.
Yeah.
And, you know, be a positive member of that community.
Exactly. Instead of complaining about what's wrong with everything, just do something to change it, you know?
Yeah.
And you going out in your community and directly affecting the people around you in a positive way is what's going to help change the world and change, you know what I mean? So,
Dude,
I'm so happy to hear that you're doing well, dude. It's, I keep saying that, but it warms my heart to see that you're, you know, I mean, you've gone through so much crap, bro.
Yeah.
That's
I mean, thank you so much. I mean, you are the first person that, you know, you text me, you asked me that how you doing, and you said, I'm happy that you guys are here, you know?
Yeah.
I got these texts from some of our friends that we work with them, you know, like other soldiers and NCOs and these lieutenants. And that was proud that that I understand, like, it was not only the friendship I had with them there. Yes, they do care. I'm here now.
Yeah.
And they do care about me, and that's awesome. So,
dude, I mean,
we
were all in it together, dude, and we were all had each other's backs. We lived, you know, amongst each other for that whole, I mean, for me, the whole year. Yeah. And, you know, we understood everything that we were going through. So, that just doesn't dissolve, you know, that just doesn't. So, yeah, man, I want to come out there and visit you guys. Hopefully Latif's still out there when
most welcome, man. I got the red room. Come, we know.
Oh, man.
As many days as you want.
I'm going to take you up on that.
And I can feed you with some Afghan bread, you know.
Yeah, man. I haven't had that since 2009, man.
Yeah, we can walk around. I would laugh. Last time, 2014 or 15, one of the staff surgeons, he came here and he visited us. His name was Matthew from Texas, I think. And I took him to Mall of America. We have the big mall in America.
Yeah, yeah.
So I took him there, you know, he was living in hotel, but I drive him around, you know, take him to some of the restaurants and those things. And he was so
happy. That's cool.
So I was telling him, man, you know, I love to see those people back, you know, in real life. You're like, now, you know, I'm dreaming to see them, but
where we can actually hang out and not be looking over our shoulder every 5 seconds, you know?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Dude. Yeah. So I'm going to California for some work for a couple months. But I want to plan. I want to go up there cause I'd like to see you. I'd like to see Latif and it would be cool to reconnect, you know. I mean, just even talking to you right now, it's like I'm really enjoying it. I'm really I like catching up with you. So
that would be awesome. I mean, you know, come here and, you know, stay with us, taking a couple of pictures and tell other buddies that we are here, you know.
Yeah, dude. I'm like, no.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. But man, that's just, I'm glad you're able to get here. I'm glad you're doing well. You're doing the corrections officer thing and you're shoving it in everyone's face who said you couldn't do it, you know? And
it's
cool, man.
Yeah. It's awesome. My dad, he's always pushing me for education. He said, you know, I salute you the way that you, you know, you don't have your brother or sister, nobody around you. And you still take care of your family and you still go to a full-time job and still working, like going to school. He said it needs a lot of commitment and you do that. And he said, I appreciate that. So he's also always, you know, my backup, you know.
So did your dad, he push you to education? He always taught you to?
Right, always, always.
Okay.
Like when we were kids, you know, we were not able to do all the fees for the school and things. But she was working hard to make sure that we get some kind of money and, you know, we can go to school.
Gotcha.
When I came here, my father was saying, like, I wish my sons or my kids, they can graduate from universities, college, and people tell me, oh, your kids is, you know, graduating this year and this, that would be awesome. But I was the first one who graduated from college because, you know, after you go to close to high school, they quit the job just because of poor economic that you gotta start working, you know. Parents always can't do it, like, you know, they're getting older, like 70 or 78, you know, it's like they can't do no more of that thing. So my big brother, I didn't tell you that, but my big brother, he's working as a PPS. PPS means Presidential Personal Security Guard.
Oh, okay.
So you might see him. He was in COPS. Say, we call him Sammy.
Oh, I remember Sammy. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So after that, when he came up, he went to he worked here for 2 years, I think.
Okay.
And he got hired with President Karzai as a personal security guard. So
that's pretty cool.
Since up to now, he's working here with the president.
Dude, that's cool. Yeah. And does he like doing that?
Yeah, he likes it. But the only thing, like, he has a concern, he looks the same like me.
Yeah.
You know, somehow with a face and everything. And he said, man, sometimes when I walk around, people is coming and say, hey, Robbie, how are you? And when I look, and I say, you know, I'm not what's up? You know? But we look the same, like twins, you know, we really look. And he said, I saw a few friends, you know, and they're asking me, man, you're changed. You don't talk to us. And he said, no, I'm not Rafi.
That's funny, dude. Yeah, I remember Sammy. There's so much from that deployment that's just, like, not, you know, when I talk to people who were there, it brings back all the stuff that, you know, everything that we were doing, and it's easy to forget a lot of what happened. It was just so high paced, you know, everything happened so fast, it felt like. But
life is going so fast. I mean, like, you know, 2009 and now it's 2020.
I know.
Like 11 years, you know,
man. Dude. Yeah. Still, I mean, it feels like yesterday we were there, man. It feels like yesterday.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah.
Dude, well, do you have anything you want? We've been doing this for about an hour. I think we got a good solid show here.
It was nice. I mean, you're doing great things that, you know, asking people, you know, and, you know, put your story out here and people can hear what's going on, and people see, like, you know, who came here, like my story, like they might be thinking this guy came as an immigrant, but, you know, he's not like a douchebag here and he worked hard, but, you know.
Yeah. Dude, you've done more for this country in half an hour than most people have their entire life. Like, you more than earned being here. You are, you know, you deserve to be here.
Thank you.
You know.
Appreciate
it. Yeah, man. Always.
I mean anytime you need, you know, and you any question or anything, maybe after I finish my bachelor we can hang out again, you know.
Yeah,
maybe your life is changing, you know, if anything's come up, we'll keep in touch as a brother, you know.
Exactly.
Dude,
anytime you need something, just give me a holler. If you need talk or anything, always, dude, I'm always open. So
thank you, bro. You know, appreciate that. Yeah,
dude, always, bro.
Yeah, I know.
Well, all right, man, I'll let you go. Dude, keep those prisons safe, man.
Yeah.
You're killing it out there.
I mean, I do it all the time. Yeah.
All right, brother. I'll be in touch.
All
Thank
right.
you.
Thank you very much, brother. Have a good day.
You too, bud.